Right. Hello, everyone. This is the two ordinary cops, or very ordinary cops.
Very ordinary.
Very ordinary. This is, so we're starting off this podcast, and as we talked about in the last episode, Damo was explaining about his first serious incident that he attended, being a junior cop, and, you know, and what he said was real, in the sense that you start off and you start to get experience, and you start to go, I've got a handle on this job. Then you hit your first big incident, and it really, like, it can rock you.
Mm.
And it takes good leadership. You've explained how the sergeant was really good and the way they actually incorporated it and got people to debrief and all that sort of thing. It's a very important thing, especially for a junior cop, to be able to, I suppose, have that experience and also learn and deal with those incidents. I'm going to explain one of mine. I actually can't remember the year. Well, it might have been 2008, 2008. And my first senior officer, he was a fantastic bloke, 10 years in the job, and then I think the next one was about 6 or 7 years in the job at that time. And we got a call to a stabbing just north of Catherine at a caravan park. And anyway, we turned up there. I've never seen so much blood in my life. And luckily for us, we didn't have to do CPR or anything like that because the ambos were already there, so they were looking after it. And this guy had actually been stabbed about 25 times. Shallowest was 2 inches.
Mm.
So he'd been hacked. And I can thankfully say he lived. Mm. And probably because the paramedics were there on time.
Like
they were, yeah. And they were exceptional in Catherine. We had some great paramedics and ambos. And
I might even just segue for a minute on them. Mm. I have seen ambos, and I'll say remote area nurses as well, and not everyone in health, but just these guys who with minimal resources, in pretty remote areas with extreme challenges, they are miracle workers. Some of the things I've seen ambos do, I've seen ambos holding, well, one, an intensive care paramedic by himself, holding a tourniquet on a man's arm who'd fallen off a roof and landed on a fence.
Yep.
And severed his tricep basically, and the ambo was there, he'd called for police backup because he knew his ambulances were tied up elsewhere. And we turn up basically just to be another set of hands for him.
Yep.
But he saved that man's life. He's holding the tourniquet in his mouth while he's trying to administer drugs in the other areas and trying to keep him awake and alert.
Yep.
Just incredible stuff.
And I'll add in there, like, we used to have conversations, and obviously we work very closely together with paramedics and all that sort of thing. And I used to sit there and say, there's no way in the world I could do their job. Like, you know, and
generally, but they used to be met with, like, no, I could do yours.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, like, these sort of incidents, they actually hold off, especially when there's a knife involved.
Mm.
And we go in with our, you know, guns drawn sometimes and basically make sure that everything's safe. And then they come in after. I mean, this incident, we were lucky. She'd actually taken off the offender and basically run away. And there was a witness there as well. And the paramedics were really good. They got him quickly into an ambulance and took him off to hospital. And my senior partner, he headed off following him because in those sort of instances, there's a possibility he could have died. And so what you do is you want to get a statement, like basically something that happened. And it may sound harsh.
A dying declaration.
Exactly,
victim,
yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And I stayed there and I was crime scene. During this time, though, you've got to remember, I was there one up for probably a little bit until our forensics officer came, and you
by yourself, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, mm. Yeah, sorry, by myself.
Yeah.
And so you've also got the concern that they can come back,
yeah,
with a knife. You know, it's something you've got to be vigilant of, and you actually in those sort of instances, or actually when you're doing the job, and Damo, you explain this so well. Just explain to the people what it's like from working to not working.
Yeah, so that's the transition. So and this is later down the track in later years, especially working in Darwin City when I lived in Palmerston. It was the ability to very strongly differentiate between your home life and your work life. And what I used to say was I'd put a ceremony in the middle of it. So the ceremony was the commute to work in a car or motorbike, whatever I was on, in. And then you go in, always wear thongs, T-shirt, shorts, casual as anything. Turn up to work, walk up through stairs, through the rooms, go to the change room, shower and into your uniform, upstairs, through the armory, you kit it up, walk into the muster room, and the last thing you do is put your radio on, turn your radio on, and you're at work, you're a policeman.
Yep.
To go home was the exact opposite. Go back, take off the radio, take off your kit, go downstairs, uniform off, uniform lives at work, have a shower, wash the day away, get in your plain clothes, shorts, t-shirt, relax.
Yep.
Walk down to the ute and just poke off home. Just another Joe on the highway.
Yep. And it's important to actually have those ceremonies because it is a break between your work life and your home life.
Absolutely.
And it's really important to have that. And because when you're at work, we're basically on a level that most people don't sit at. You have to be highly vigilant. You have to be, you know, watching everybody. You know, you've got to be on guard pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, and the term for that is that hypervigilance roller coaster. And what happens, and we discussed in the previous episodes, where you get to work and everything's new and shiny and you think, this is the best job I've ever had in my life. Because it's very exciting. You're living in, you're basically involved in the things that make the news. So you're going through that process.
Yep.
What happens, I found especially, is I loved it. I love going, the worse the job, the better, especially as you get more senior. You really crave that. You love that chaos.
Yep.
You sort of thrive on it. And what happens is you're a superstar at work, but poor old mum, when you get home, you're a mobile phone on a charger.
Yeah. Yes.
So you get home and you're tired. It'll be the 4 days off. So what are we doing this weekend? Well, I don't care. What do you want for dinner? Oh, I don't care. Well, look, I want to go over and see these guys. There's a barbecue on this weekend. Let's go over and see them. Ah, yeah, okay. Well, what are you going to... You've got no input. People at work think you're a superstar, but your family's starting to see the other side of you, and that is that you, when they see you, you're not a superstar. You're actually quite disengaged.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, it's the old saying, what goes up must come down.
Yep.
But it's also that separation, you don't want the trauma coming across.
Definitely, and you don't want to take that home.
No.
Because, you know, we did this job because we basically prepared ourselves and we put ourselves, you know, in the firing line.
Yeah, that's right.
And we accepted that, you know, like everything that comes from the PTSD and all that. We did this willingly.
Yeah.
You know, because that was what we like to do as, you know, as the people that we
and
are.
And loved most of
it. Oh, definitely. Quite. Yeah. Oh, yes. And and the thing is, you don't want to, when I talk to some people, I've got to actually hold back in how I say stuff because what is normal for you and I is completely abnormal for somebody
Absolutely.
Else listening. And you don't want to... I don't want to put trauma on people about what I've seen.
Yeah.
And for everybody listening here, you've got to understand that we are actually making these stories very, very light.
Oh, yeah. This is the PG-13, as the next would say.
Yeah, well, yes,
and,
for
and I think
sure.
the police listening would understand that. Well, for one... We're not going to identify anybody.
No.
That's not what this is about. And it's not our place to do that. This is not bragging. This has got nothing to do with our ego. And like I've been saying the whole time, eat your ego.
Exactly.
Eat it.
Yep.
Seriously. Don't worry. Forget ego.
Yeah.
We're all human. People make mistakes. It is what it is. But look, what you've just said there, it's very important. That's that transition. So you were talking about a critical incident you'd been to earlier and
your
response to that. So touch on that response. So tell me how you felt after that first major incident.
It really affects you about what could have happened, if you know what I mean. Like you sit there and, like I am saying, there's 5 litres of blood in a human body. And I reckon that guy lost, I don't know what the extent is when you die, but he would have been very close. The doctors actually said the reason he survived was because he was drunk and didn't panic.
Yeah.
And you know, it was phenomenal, really. I could not believe he survived with the amount of blood. I couldn't conceive there was that much blood in a body.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that because, especially early on, it is phenomenal
how
much blood. I've also been to a matter where this person was murdered. He'd been stabbed sitting in a seat in a domestic violence related matter. And he'd been stabbed a number of times through the thighs and one of the stab wounds severed his femoral artery.
Yeah.
So the amount of blood, this comes out rapidly. And obviously, high blood pressure, highly intoxicated, so the blood comes out very quickly.
Yeah.
Without being completely graphic, it completely filled the room.
Yeah, yeah.
So the, it's something that movies don't depict well. Like, people, it's, an incredible amount of blood.
Yep.
And it's a hell of a sight, but sight's one thing. I often think about this and go, people say, oh, gee, you must see a lot. It's like, yeah, you see a lot, but forget what you see.
Yeah.
What about what you smell?
Yeah.
And what you taste.
Oh, and
what,
feel. You
know, feel and sense.
Like the emotions. Like, you touched on it a bit there before. Like, how did I feel? Well, one, I had to worry about whether she was going to come back. Am I in danger? Are the other people around me in danger?
Yeah.
Jenna, is he going to live? What more can I do? Mm. Because the thing is, a police officer, you want to do everything. You want to take care of the situation. You want to handle this as quickly as you, or not so much quickly, but as well as you can.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's outside your power.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've got, like, eat humble pie.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, there are incidents that you can't have control over. But you do your job, and it's the ones where they do pass away, as you spoke about in the previous podcast, and they're the ones that actually stick with it. Could I have done more?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I made light of the fact that I've done CPR 23 times, never successfully.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I know that I did the best I could. It's not a matter of, do I ever look back and go, what more? No, I did what I could do. The ambos were with me. I think I'm aware of myself enough that I'm not that emotional. I did the best I could.
Yeah.
But of course you think, had we been here earlier, what if this, what if that? And that definitely is there.
I'll just touch on that too, because when we're new cops, you remember we were trying to rush to jobs.
Oh, yeah.
It like you said, everything's shiny, everything's new, and you want to make a difference. You are fighting. You're almost sprinting out to the car.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, forget want to make a difference. A lot of it's too, it's just exciting.
It is. Yeah.
It's all new. It's fun.
Yes.
It's, holy crap, I can't believe they're paying me to do this.
Exactly, yeah.
And, like, we get to drive cars fast, we get to do all kinds of crazy things.
Yep.
We're running into the wild stuff that's interesting.
Exactly. Like, well, and I've always used this. I've always said, what most people run away from, we run towards.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, that's more of a, that could be any human.
Oh, definitely,
It's that I know a lot of people who aren't police or aren't emergency services, aren't military, and they run towards things too.
Yeah.
Because it's bloody interesting.
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah.
So, I love the fact that we're involved in interesting things.
Definitely.
Sometimes those things get less interesting as you get older or get more experienced. But it doesn't stop the fact that there is a cumulative trauma.
Yes.
And look, I think the next podcast, I think we're going to go more into that.
Yeah.
And more into, we can even talk about how over the years and how things do build and how you may not have been affected at the time. But talk about, and look, I love to talk about PTSD as a bit of a continuum.
Yes.
It's the same as physical health. You can have a twisted ankle or you can have a snapped spine.
Yep.
They're very different injuries.
Yep.
Well, I find that there's the mental health equivalent. You can have a twisted ankle version of PTSD or you can have the snapped spine version of PTSD.
Exactly. And we've got the twisted ankle.
I think I've got the niggled ankle, I believe. Yeah. Niggling ankle. And sometimes the ankle flares and sometimes it's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think I'm very lucky.
And we will touch on what that means later on in other podcasts, how, sometimes it is fine. Sometimes there's no reaction to stuff and sometimes there is. I mean, like I explained earlier, I even teared up when you're telling that story the other day and it's just because I can relate to it and because I've lived it.
Yeah, and I think even a lot of things that you may not have spoken about at the time, years later, you talk about it and it's funny how you talk to other people who may have been involved and they're traumatised by it.
Yeah.
And when I say traumatised, that word comes with a stigma. The stigma needs to be removed. That traumatised just means that it's the injury. Your brain is injured by it.
Yep.
And sometimes that bruise will sit there for a long time and it won't start to hurt until years later.
Yep.
And that's all it is. It's just an injury to a brain, a very normal person responding in a very normal way to a very extraordinary situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think I read somewhere, and don't quote me, and it's obviously a podcast and not an academic essay, but the average person will be exposed to a very small number of very traumatic incidents, sometimes none, sometimes two or three in their lifetime. I think I read somewhere that the average police officer or first responder will be exposed to 800 traumatic events in their life. And I'm talking critical incidents, life and limb, of themselves or someone else in danger or actually deceased or just the human body in a very traumatic situation. So we don't need to go into gushing detail, but motor vehicle accidents do terrible things to a human body. There is something very very disgusting about a human body that looks how it should not look.
Yeah.
It's a revolting, like, and when I say revolting, I mean it in that it makes you revolt.
Yeah.
In that you go, wow, that's not normal.
Not normal. Not look, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There is something very human about wanting to put that back to normality.
Yeah.
And it's funny how, well, it's not funny, but it is what it is. That down the track, things that you didn't think you responded to, you do respond to. And it has a lot to things not looking the way they should.
Yep.
Or, my God, heck, what has occurred? How much force has been impacted on
this human? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
For them now to look like that.
Yep, yeah.
So that's critical incident stuff. That's that first critical incident.
Yep.
You go to plenty of them, and the you know, the police and the more senior police is probably all nodding, going, yeah, it's sort of, does it get easier? Yes.
Yeah.
But does that mean it's not affecting you? I don't know. Your brain shifts and that you start to look after the junior guys and
yeah. Just touch on here, and I know some people sit there, and I've seen a couple of memes and all that sort of thing where they've got a photo of a cop, you know, and the family's crying and because somebody's been killed and all that sort of stuff, and they're sitting there, oh, the cop's not showing emotion. Inside, that cop is showing emotion.
Yeah.
But the fact is, we put on a face, and we put on a face for one reason, because we have to make sure, one, we're impartial in the way we handle the investigation, so you get rid of the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
That is the probably critical point of any investigation, is don't get emotional over it. Emotion clouds judgment.
Yep.
And the other thing is, you want to make sure that you do it to the best of your ability,
yep.
and that is actually the best way you can help the victims.
Mm.
Afterwards, it burns, doesn't it? Like, you sit there, like, when we come down, like we were talking about, when we're in a shift and then we suddenly come down, I've gone home and cried.
Mm.
It's, you know, it really hits you. But at work, you look like a, as my lovely partner calls, a square jaw.
Square jaw.
Because, you know, that's, you just, like, you look like you're made of iron and you're tough and you're 10 foot tall. But, yeah, what goes on behind the scenes.
That's right.
And we will touch on that. In definitely our future podcast.
I think next time we might go through the those different spectrums of PTSD and how the job over time creates a very long term change in you.
Yes.
And I think we'll touch on that a bit more and go into that into another one. But I think in this time, what we've spoken about within this particular episode is that transition from that junior cop, like we were saying, it's all new. We've gone through that trauma. We've just gotten used to the job.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we've had a bit of a laugh, and then all of a sudden we've been here. And don't get me wrong, this can be in your first shift.
Yes.
It can be, as we've seen in
Of our squaddies in his first shift had to do CPR straight out. Out of the back of the cage.
Straight out of the college. Yep. These things can happen very early in a career. Mine didn't happen straight away. Mine was about 3 or 4 months in.
And I think about the same for me.
Yeah.
And which is lucky, really. Mm. And like, especially the area we're working in.
Yeah, that's right. There's a bit of a foundation there. So I think next time what we might do is go into how the collective trauma of a career. So we might talk about how you might go to, or in my case, I think I worked out 20-odd fatal motor vehicle crashes, be it vehicle or motorbike or aircraft crashes.
What did you call yourself?
Well, at one point, I think it was Catherine or Tennant.
It was Catherine.
It was Catherine.
Because I was out at Croker Island.
I didn't call it.
I'll tell this story because it is pretty funny. And the fact that what there is on our police system, there's a management significant. And it's what the commissioner reads. And it's just so if there's something significant that happens around the territory, when you actually write up the job, you can do a case note, which actually goes onto the job. And
this is in the computer reporting system.
Yeah. And when you put it in there, you can tick it as management significant. And what it does is it comes up on your front screen of your computer system. And it basically, it holds on there for
24 hours.
24?
Yeah. I don't remember.
So it just sits there. So you can click on them. Usually there's anywhere between 10 and 15, I reckon. Maybe generally. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And what they do is they go off the screen. I mean, you can always look them up if you need to, but it's just there so he can be kept up to date. But it's also great for us. You think of us, we're the worst rubberneckers in the world because we can see what's happening around the territory and we get the real, this is not media. This is actually real facts about what's happening. And I was probably, you know, I was working on an intervention station out on an island, which, yeah, a lot of time didn't have a lot going on. So what I used to do is every morning I'd look up these management certificates, just see what's happening around the territory. And anyway, it's and you have a specific style about the way you actually write your headings. And it said, Damien Barb reports dead body. And then there was a couple down. Damien Barb reports dead body. Anyway, go a few more down. Damien Barb reports dead body. So I've sat there and gone, oh, this is... So I've sent you an email. I said, Damo, what's the go? Every time there's a dead body in Katherine, your name's attached to it. And what was your reply?
Mate, I'm the Grim Reaper. Yeah, it was a moment.
It was, yeah. But that's some of that dark humour.
Yeah,
and it's the way that we deal with the trauma. I mean, you've in the space of 24 hours, you've been to 3 dead bodies.
Yeah, yep, I had, and that was as a junior detective or training.
Yes,
I was trained. I was a plainclothes constable, but yeah, that was a little bit later in the criminal investigation side of things. But
yep.
Yeah, that's the reality of it. There's people who go to a lot worse.
Exactly.
That is what it is.
Yeah, and I think that's it's incredible to touch on the fact that like they go every 24 hours. Yeah. So within 24 hours, you've been to 3 dead bodies.
Yeah, that's right. We'll touch on it more, but I mean, within a number of months, I'd been to 7 child deaths in the space of a few months in 2011.
Yep.
Yeah, the motor vehicle aircraft crashes. I went to
two.
Well,
you had a bad
crashes.
One up at Pine Creek. I remember.
Bad plane crash. So these things happen.
Yeah,
it is what it is. Police have to deal with it. Ambulance officers have to deal with it. It is what it is.
Yeah,
but that's the collective trauma.
I think me personally, like I've definitely seen my fair share of deceased people. But you, I don't know. It's just, and some people just get loaded with it. It's just. Yeah, yep. Some people get different sort of crimes that they deal with constantly, but I think you, and I know, and we'll talk about it later on, you ended up being a coroner's commie.
Yeah, 6 months in Alice Springs in 2017.
And very, very good at it. I'll talk you up a little bit there, but only because they did use examples that you'd done in the when I did the detective's course. So.
With the coronial, the actual coronial reporting processes. But, look, I think what we'll wrap up here is that it's those first matters that really, really bring it home that this is real. This job is life and death.
Yep.
The leadership that deals with that early on, and how you deal with that as your member, and then moving forward as a junior member, I should say, and then moving forward
as becoming a more seasoned police officer, I suppose.
And then moving off into your specialist roles.
Well, we'll just add in there, we did catch the offender for that stabbing.
Did get him? Yeah, that's right.
They were down on the riverbank, apparently having a. Bit of a good time with another male.
There we go.
So, and it was actually her boyfriend she'd stabbed, so obviously there wasn't much love lost.
She moved on pretty quickly.
She did move on very quickly, yeah.
All right, well, thank you again. That's another episode down, and we'll be talking to you again shortly.
Yep.
Stay tuned.